From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 22nd day of August 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes from Stuart Peterson. A bit later in the program, we'll check in with the folks on the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour, including Brian Grady on the Eastern Leg. He'll update us on the numbers as they were released from the states of Indiana and Nebraska last night and what he's seen in the state of Illinois today. And then from Iowa, we'll catch updates from both Sherman Newland from Risk Management Commodities and Jeff Wilson. He is with Pro Farmer, and we'll do all of that before we get to the weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check in now on what happened in Chicago and see what's going on with the CME Group and agricultural trade with Jackie Vakes. She's at Stuart Peterson. Hi, Jackie. How are you today?
Oh, hi, Todd. I'm good. I can't say so much for the markets. You know, they're reacting to Pro Farmer, of course, so down on corn, down on beans, but to be expected. This is a typical Pro Farmer week, basically, is what we're looking at.
Yeah, so the Pro Farmer Group is out, and we'll hear more from them here in just a bit. The morning look at Illinois with Brian Grady, and then we should catch up with Sherman Newland as well. He's out on the Western Leg in Iowa. Those numbers have been big, and they have had an impact in Chicago. Though let's start with the support and resistance and see where they might run to first.
Well, okay, I'm going to have September yet this week because, you know, next week is first notice day, so then we'll be switching over. But support on September, 352, 337, and 305, and then resistance, 375, 380, and, of course, that gap up at that $4 to $4.25. December, 365, and today we've been, you know, right around it, 350 and a quarter, 320. Major support, and then resistance 380, 389, and the gap from 410 to 410 and a half. Now on beans, 853, 816 and a half on September, and then major is at 722. Resistance 912, which is what we went up to the other day and failed, 941, and then 1006 for major resistance. November 860. 826 and a quarter, and major is 737. Resistance 916, 944, 975. So, you know, not a lot of changes on the corn side of things. Again, beans are the ones that move around because of the fact that they tend to gain or lose a lot more than anybody else does. But it's there. And so hopefully we're not going to test any of the major supports. And maybe we'll get to test major resistance, but it's a big question.
Now, where's the money flow headed at this time?
Well, you know, we've been looking at that, and I'm not going to give numbers this week. One thing I'm going to do, Todd, is, you know, we've known that the managed money basically has been long the red soft red wheat and meal, and they've been short on corn, beans, and oil. Now, this week, it appears that they're taking profits because their short position in corn, beans, and oil decreased, and they actually bought soft red wheat and meal, increasing their long positions. And so I think some of that is related to September option expiration, which comes in on Friday. And then, like I said earlier, first notice day next week. So we'll get a better picture, I think, as we get further down into the week.
And then the Pro Farmer Tour is out. We'll hear from the tour just in a bit. But the numbers for Illinois, or rather for Indiana and Nebraska, were out last night. 182.3 for Indiana, Nebraska at 179.17. That Nebraska number is low, of course, much lower than USDA, but that's because of the way they count and get through the irrigated acres. But it has had an impact in Chicago, hasn't it? And especially, and I didn't give the soybean pod counts, but those numbers have been tremendous.
Oh, my gosh, they've been unbelievable. I think, you know, we're going to see some 100-bushel acre beans this year. And one of the things that they don't look at, I believe, is any dry land. And I'm hearing dry land in Nebraska as high as 180 bushels an acre. You know, and a lot of times that's 80 to 90 bushels for the acre on corn. Some areas in Nebraska haven't even turned on a pivot this year, which is really unusual for them. And I got some numbers on the Pro Farmer Tour. Out of the last 14 years, they were 6.9 bushels below the final corn number. And 10 out of 14 years, they were 2.7 bushels below the final bean yield. You know, so that I'm certain is just a reflection of where they actually go to look.
Hey, one thing, let's switch to Washington and change topics, because it looks like NAFTA could be settled maybe even today.
That's exactly right, which is, you know, that's good. And, you know, that it's coming to an end, that's another thing off of our off of our plate. And hopefully we'll give a little more security to the markets itself. Now, you know, U.S. and China resume their talks today on tariffs. If they would reach an agreement, you know, that would be a surprise, to be absolutely honest, as far as I think, you know. But if they don't reach an agreement, there's talk, you know, that there might be more tariffs added on both sides. And, you know, I've had a lot of people say, you know, what's driving this whole thing? Well, I think, you know, primarily it's being driven by China's policy of not allowing the yuan to be able to float, you know, like other currencies. And I put together an example here. Between the 25th of July and the 31st of July, the Japanese yen gained 1%. In other words, they lost 1% of their buying power, while China only lost 0.5%. And so I think that those are the things that we're going for, is to try and get more of a balance going in that side of it. It's their economic policies, basically. They sold 74.6 metric tons this week of 2013 beans for $11.98. Can you imagine, from state reserves? From 2013, that's 5 years ago, you know, so it's kind of interesting. We really don't know what they have in terms of their stocks. Let's just put it that way. They don't share any of that information.
Yeah, before we leave trade, I should clarify that it's not NAFTA, really. It's just the Mexican side, the Mexico side of the NAFTA agreement that they may come to some kind of agreement on. Trend lines and inspections, and then let's move to Brazil and Argentina.
Well, you know, I've been covering the trend lines. We didn't have any changes on corn this week. The interesting part is we actually did have, we did change the beans. 21.9% of the acres now are just at trend line, and 58.8% of the acres are above trend line. So they actually fell backwards, and we'll see once, you know, if that continues to be the way it is. When we look at inspections this week, Todd, corn came in at 43.1, beans 23.5, both of them, again, on track to reach or exceed the USDA goals. China mainland did not take any beans this week from an inspection standpoint, but again, I think I've said it before, I suspect that they're buying from other Asian countries that really have stepped up their buying since these tariffs were put into place. You know, you just take a step back. They sold beans for $11.98 a bushel. That says to me, you know, a lot of times they can't sell out of state reserves. That says to me that beans are pretty tight in a lot of places in China. And as we move on to Brazil and Argentina, a judge in his infinite wisdom came in and immediately banned the use of Roundup. And, you know, this could cause some really major issues in Brazil. 95% of all the beans that are planted down there are Roundup ready. And, you know, they use Roundup, we all know that, for weed control as well as on their no-till acres. So, you know, it makes planting faster and easier from a time management standpoint. So this could send farmers really scrambling for alternative weed control. And it maybe could actually cause their bean yields to be lower than what they've been over the last number of years. And so one thing, you know, you got to wonder what it's like to be a farmer in Brazil. It's like they just keep on piling it on top of you. You don't know if you can take it for how long. But Argentina, interesting. Water levels on the Paraná River, you know, they had that terrible drought this year. They're actually causing Argentina to send ships out that aren't totally full. And it is it's the lowest since 2008. There are 29 ports along the Paraná River that are being affected, and 19 of those are export grain ports. 8 of them are processing plants that use grain oil and other products. And so the other thing that's going on down there, they announced that the reduction in the export tax has been suspended on soy meal and oil. And it's primarily because they need tax money. But beans are going to continue to go down at 0.5% per month, supposedly until the end of December. There's a lot of people who are worried, you know, that they're going to stop it at the end of December, but we'll see once where they're at. All the things that are going on in Brazil and Argentina continue to give us some support. But again, you know, we hope that it's going to work, but hope's not a strategy. Let's just put it that way.
Indeed. Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us for the day.
Thank you, Todd. Have a good one.
You too. That, of course, is Jackie Vake. She is with Stuart Peterson. Well, all week we've been following the ProFarmer Midwest Crop Tour. The Eastern leg is led by Brian Grady, and he now joins us to take a look at the numbers that were released from the state of Indiana last night and for the state of Nebraska. Thanks so much, Brian, for being with us. Can you take me through those numbers first, please?
Well, in the state of Indiana, we came up with an average corn yield of 182.3 on samples pulled. So it's a good corn crop in Indiana. There's no doubt about that. It's more variable than what we saw in Ohio. And keep in mind, the Ohio corn crop was the best one that I've seen for that state in my years of doing crop tour. It was just phenomenal. Indiana's, you know, the yields came in a little bit stronger than what they would in Ohio, but you would suspect that anyway. And then our yield was up 6.5% from what we found in the state last year. Now, in Indiana, USDA put them at 186. You know, when you factor in our average miss over the course of time, our number gets upwards of about 185. And USDA was up 3.3% from where they had last year for their estimate. So, yeah, I think we're in the ballpark. Maybe the possibility of adding a little bit more to that yield. But I will say, because of the advanced maturity, I don't think that there's a whole lot of opportunity to add here late in the growing season.
And then pod counts for Indiana?
Pod counts came in at 1,312, basically, rounding that up there a little bit. And that was up about 12% from where it was last year in the state of what we found. So there's a lot of pods out there. There's no doubt about that. Now, our sampling method is that we count everything that's a quarter inch or greater. And some years we have where we count a lot of those little small pods, those quarter inch pods. And we count if they're flat or if they're plump, either way, anything that's a quarter inch or more. I'll be honest with you, there weren't a lot of the small pods this year, and there weren't a lot of flat pods. They're big pods and they're plump. So you can tell they have the energy here. They got rains through that area both Monday and Tuesday. So we got wet yesterday again. And so they have the energy, I think, to really finish strong. And usually it comes down to moisture with soybeans and whether or not they have it or don't have it. And that determines how they finish. And so they have the moisture this year in most of those areas.
On the western leg, I follow Sherman Newland, and he talks to us in the afternoon as well. We'll maybe get something from him momentarily here on the radio station. However, one of the accounts there in Nebraska yesterday was extraordinary, and I think I've seen some of those from the eastern leg too. Can you tell me a little bit about those big numbers, both in the eastern and the western leg, for the pod counts for soybeans?
Yeah, you know, the state of Nebraska, they ended up at 1299 for their pod counts. That was up almost 15% from what we found last year on crop tour in that state. So the pods are out there. You know, the percentage increases that we've seen over a year ago in pod counts, you know, it's pretty incredible. They're all double digits, but just to run through them quickly, Ohio up 12.8%, Indiana up 12.2%. South Dakota up 13.9% and Nebraska up 14.9% versus year ago. So, quite a few pods out there. And you know, that's always the question, because, we don't measure yield on soybeans. We measure those pods in a 3x3 square, but that gives us how much yield factory is out there. And the factory is definitely out there this year. And like I said, it has the moisture to give them a good finish in all likelihood.
And your numbers for the Pro Farmer Tour in Nebraska for corn?
On the corn side of things, came in at 179.2, and that was up 8.3%. So, you know, it's pretty uniform across. I mean, when you look at Ohio, we had a 179.6, Indiana 182.3, South Dakota 178, and then the 179.2 out of Nebraska. So, those first four states that we have numbers from, pretty uniform across the Corn Belt right now. And now, you know, we're into the central portion more as we go through Illinois here on the eastern side, and then into Iowa later on this afternoon, eastern Iowa. And then the western crew is going through western Iowa today.
Yeah, tell me about the miss that you annually have in Nebraska, because it's important to understand the difference between the USDA number and the corn number the Pro Farmer puts out on the tour.
Right. So 15.5 bushels too light is the typical miss out of the state of Nebraska. And just to explain that, our sampling is more heavily concentrated in the eastern half of the state. There's less irrigation there. So our samples are about 40% irrigated and 60% dry land. And the flip of that is the exact opposite, where the state is about 60% irrigated and 40% dry land. And that's why there's that miss factor. And you know, that's just the average miss back to 2001. You know, it doesn't mean that that's how much we miss it every year. That's just the average. But if you just take that 15.5 and you add it to that that 179.2, you're upwards of that 196 that USDA put on it back in August.
And finally, yesterday, you entered the state of Illinois. You crossed, I think, somewhere near Hoopston and probably made your way relatively straight to Bloomington. And you've been traveling towards Peoria today. So across that line there, what have you seen?
Well, I'll be honest, on the east central portion on my route, and I'm only speaking to one of 12 routes right now. We won't have the Illinois final numbers until later this evening. There was more variability. There was some low numbers that we pulled on my route, and then there were some really big numbers. You could see the stress. You could see that Mother Nature hadn't been as kind. Tip back was an issue on a lot of the fields. I would say 50 to 60% of the samples that I pulled yesterday, the ears were tipped back to some degree. Now, there's still some strong yields out there, even though they tip back in some of those fields. It's just not as big as what it could have been. So, you know, we're leaving some of that yield out in the field because of Mother Nature.
Hey, Brian, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time with us today. Brian Grady, of course, is on the eastern leg of the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour. Leading the western leg is Jeff Wilson. He now joins us from the northwestern part of the state. Is that right?
That's correct. We came straight up the state line between Nebraska and Iowa, and then we got into Sioux, Lyon, Plymouth, Buena Vista, Pocahontas, Humboldt, and Webster counties. So we've got about 10 stops in already today. We're making one right now. My crew is out checking corn and beans. So we've seen a pretty big range on the corn, 137 to 221, average about 181, I think, is our average right now for the car. The pod counts are wide ranging as well, 505 to 1300, average about 900. So I think those numbers feel a little light to me for this part of the state. Northwest Iowa is definitely suffering from late planting from all the water they had early in the season. And then they just have had too much water just standing throughout the season. I mean, I wouldn't say things are terrible, but there's nothing extraordinary up here in the northwest part of Iowa. Both the pod counts and corn yields definitely are impacted by too much water. You can see it. I mean, there's small ponds in a lot of fields. There's even a few, you know, nice lakefront frontages in some of these fields, you know, 5-6 acres, just ponds still standing. And then you can see areas that were underwater earlier this year. So the amount of acres that might be harvested up here could be a little bit lower than maybe what USDA has plugged into some of their numbers. The crops are moving along fairly quickly towards maturation, even though they were planted a little bit late. Most of the corn is dented that we've tested up here, and there's very few bean fields that we've counted that have any blooms left on them. So we're not going to get any new rush of new production out of those soybean plants.
Hey, Jeff, we'll catch up with you again tomorrow. Thanks so much. Jeff Wilson is leading the western leg of the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour. Sherman Newland is also on that leg, and he's been coming right up the middle of the western half of the state of Iowa. Thanks so much, Sherman. Tell me about your trip so far.
Well, actually, we kind of leapfrogged higher and went through Council Bluffs, kind of up the west side. Honestly, we've seen a lot of flooding. A lot of wet damaged corn, you know, kind of spotty in spots, but more than anything, we've seen a lot of water damage, a lot of standing water, a lot of corn hurt from too much nitrogen. I mean, we've had yields from 130 though to 220, 210. Our truck average so far has been 181 and a quarter for corn, and our pod average has been 1188 on the pods. So, but what we've seen has been, you know, wind-blown corn, some green snaps, some wind damage, And then a lot of water damage.
Hey, thanks so much for the update, Sherman. Sherman Newland is with Risk Management Commodities. He's out of Hudsonville, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find all the information about the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour on our website. The address there is willag.org, willag.org. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner is now here from World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much. It is a good afternoon, I hope.
Yeah, indeed. So I want to start not here, but in other parts of the world. We've been following dry conditions in Eurasia and Europe both. Can you tell me about crop conditions for corn in particular in Ukraine and Russia?
Yeah, the weather situation in Ukraine and southern Russia has certainly deteriorated on a very quick basis here over the past few weeks. You know, in July, we managed to break away from the drier and warmer biased pattern that had occurred earlier in the summer that was stressing those crops. And then we got some relief. The crop did a little bit better for a few weeks. And then all of a sudden, we got to the end of July and early August, and the bottom fell out again. And it hasn't rained in some of these areas for quite a while. And the temperatures are well above average once again. So we have depleted the topsoil moisture, and subsoil moisture is still running short to very short as well. So from a corn perspective, the late season crop is being pushed to maturity much quicker than usual, and that's probably going to hurt some of the yield. But there's some soybeans in Ukraine and parts of southern Russia that are probably being hurt more significantly by being starved to death on moisture. Unirrigated fields are probably going to yield rather poorly since there's not much rain in the pipeline in these areas for at least the next 10 days and maybe 2 weeks.
Does that expand all the way into Kazakhstan as well?
It does. It does. The western part of Kazakhstan has been dry biased most of the summer, in fact, and so they are not going to see a very good yielding year as well. Of course, they do irrigate a large part of their crop because they're in a more arid location in the world.
Back a little further to the west, when you look into Europe, what do you see there?
Most of the European continent has been struggling with dryness all summer long. We've had periods where it's been very warm. We've had periods when the temperature's been more seasonable. And the problem is that we did get away from the excessive heat that we had in July, but it still has not rained significantly in the heart of Germany, a big part of France, and some neighboring areas in western Poland. And these areas, they get a little bit of shower activity every once in a while, but it's just not enough to get them out of the deep hole they've got into here in regard to their moisture deficits. And so the crops continue to be stressed, although perhaps not as extreme as they were in July. And the forecast is going to offer more of the same, where they're going to get erratic rainfall that's below average and continue with a near to above average temperature bias there.
So much of this tells me, and we already know this, about the wheat crop in the northern hemisphere that we'll be short. I'm wondering about the Australian wheat crop because they're now beginning into their spring.
That's right. Queensland and northern New South Wales are extremely dry. They've been dealing with a drought of great severity for the last year and a half or so, and it has not rained very well while they planted this year's crop. And now we are approaching reproduction. It's supposed to begin in early September, and it's still very dry. But the good news for the farmers there is that coming up here at the end of this week, Friday going into Saturday, there was going to be a good opportunity for some rain to fall across this drought-stricken area. It's not going to be enough to fully restore soil moisture, obviously, but there will be enough moisture there to stimulate a little bit of improvement in that crop as it does start to approach the reproductive season. So perhaps a little bit of improvement will occur, but they're going to need a lot more rain than that in order to get back on their feet again.
Well, it's hopscotch across the planet, and we'll stay with wheat. Argentina, where they will have a wheat crop as well in the coming several months. What does their condition look like today? Because they came out of a drought.
That's right. And they did real well in fixing a lot of that dryness. But some of the western production areas in Cordoba and a minor production area in Santiago del Estero, which is west central and northwestern parts of the country respectively, are still running rather dry. And they do need a good drink of water. They are just a few weeks away from crop development. And so there's plenty of time here yet to improve their soil moisture situation, but there's nothing much on the charts here for the next week to 10 days. And so we'll have to look into September and see if we can get a better weather pattern to evolve for them. I do believe that they will see some timely rain when it counts the most.
And finally, we're still a bit away from this, but in just about a month, the dry season should end in Brazil, I think, and they might begin some of their planting progress. Do you have any longer-term outlook for them?
Yeah, I think this year's growing season in Brazil should be fairly normal. We expect the seasonal rains to begin on time. There should be a sufficient amount of moisture there to support the crops most of the growing season. There may be a little period of dryness that might develop in late December and early January in the southernmost part of the country. That would be Rio Grande do Sul up into Paraná, but we're not expecting it to fester into any kind of large-scale problem for them.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
You bet. Have a great day.
You too. That, of course, is Drew Lerner with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org.